even on bad days.
I've had a rough day.
It's a Sean Hannity day.
A horrible day.
Well, I got a hangnail.
Ouch, that hurts.
Day After Rush on 55 KRC.
It's 7:06 at 55 KRC Talk Station. It is Friday, and a very happy Friday to you, and a warm welcome to my next guest here, Rick Gates. He rose through multiple senior roles in the Donald Trump campaign. Beginning of March 2016, he rose to the rank of deputy campaign chairman on the inside of Trump's historic win from both a strategic and operational point of view. So we're going to get a little insight of what they do in the waning days into the election here. After his election, Trump's election, he continued to serve as the deputy chairman to the president-elect's inaugural committee, and after that, a co-founder of the America First Policy Super PAC for the president. Welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show, Rick Gates. Great to have you on today.
Brian, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I just looked up and I said it was nice to see that Joe Biden actually left his basement. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to face any hard questions out there, Rick, and it's got to be frustrating for the campaign. But what is going on? We're a couple days away now. It's Tuesday. This is it. What's going on inside the campaign right now?
Absolutely. This is a very critical period of time. The campaign is shoring up what they're doing in terms of key battleground states. They have a number of paths to victory, as we call it. That's getting to those 270 electoral votes. You're trying to figure out if there are any last-minute states that, you know, you can win. For Trump, it's New Hampshire and Nevada are two good targets that they think they can pull out. And then you're trying to prevent your opponent from, trying to take away states. So for Joe Biden, one of the things we found in 2016, Hillary did this, is, you know, they're saying Georgia is the toss-up or battleground, Texas as well. I mean, if you look back at 2016, Trump won Georgia by almost 5 points. So, you know, you got to watch out for the little fakes that the campaigns might throw at each other. But it's going to be a very critical, time. Obviously, the biggest difference is President Trump will probably be in about 20 places over the next 2 days, and Joe Biden, will probably be in one. That's his basement.
That is true, reading from his teleprompter and avoiding any hard questions. Not that he ever gets any. It's going to be so frustrating. Donald Trump obviously expresses his frustrations regularly on Twitter, but I can't imagine being in that position and being so harshly treated and having very focused, difficult questions posed at me every day and seeing my opponent get a pass. I'm sorry, I just don't get that, Rick.
It's very frustrating. It's incredibly frustrating. And this is a guy who, Donald Trump is a political outsider. And he has been attacked from the day that he was elected. And it was a system that was just built over decades and decades of kind of inside government people. And I call it organ rejection. You know, they couldn't believe that Donald Trump had won in 2016 and they didn't know what to do. And they did the only thing they thought they could do, and that was try to get rid of him.
Yeah. Rabbit attack mode 24/7. And here we are. He's running for reelection and wishing him the best of luck. Now, I guess for those out there who have made up their mind, and I think the distinctions are pretty gosh darn clear, more so than I think at any point in my political life. Is there anyone undecided out there anymore, Rick?
No, I don't think there are many people undecided. I think there are people that are torn between Donald Trump's policies, and they love his policies. They want to see the economy grow. And then sometimes, just the way that he might come off, whether it's in a tweet or, something he says along the way. But at the end of the day, the majority of those people are going to vote for the president, because the number one issue in any presidential election is the economy. And so when people go into the voting booths, or if they've already voted, they're thinking about their pocketbook and who's going to be best to guide the economy over the next 4 years.
Fair enough. Now, what about the early voting numbers? They just seem to be through the roof. Nobody's ever seen this many people early vote before. And I guess the argument is, or at least the conventional wisdom is, that most of the early voters, or a sizable percentage, are Democrats, and that Republicans are keeping their powder dry for Tuesday. Is that your perception as well, Rick?
Well, it's true. That's the traditional thinking, but I want to give you two quick facts here.
Please.
The first one is, when you look at that breakout of numbers of ballots requested, of early voting, You've got to look at it in the context that in the party registered states, you know, it defines Democrats and Republicans as the ballots are sent out. But that doesn't mean that's who they voted for. Those ballots have been requested and returned, but those votes have not been counted. So you could have a million, you know, Democrats request ballots in Pennsylvania, for example. That doesn't mean that Democrats get a million votes. And so, you know, people need to be cautious about, you know, the numbers with respect to early voting. And it's good that people are out voting early. And the second thing I want to say is that, you know, the Republicans have done a great job of getting in-person early votes out. And this is something that the Democrats didn't expect. And that's why you're seeing, you know, these polls tighten quite substantially, because the Republicans have actually come out in person early. And by the way, the in-person votes are the only ones that are being counted right now in terms of the Republicans or Democrats or another party. So, you know, I'd caution people just to, you know, everybody's going to start throwing around numbers, you know, over the next 4 days right into Election Day. But I think it's good to, you know, make sure people have the facts, because the Republicans are doing a lot better than people suggest, but the Democrats are going to try to put that down.
Yeah, I was, as you were talking about numbers and be careful what you're hearing versus what reality. It sounds to me like COVID-19 statistics, Rick. Anyhow, you don't have to go down that road. That's for me to go down. What about Pennsylvania? That seems to be the just an outrageous situation in terms of their vote counting. And I saw the Supreme Court just sort of kick the can for a future hearing on whether or not it's appropriate to count ballots that have been turned in after Election Day. But I'm guessing there's a legal team on the ground in Pennsylvania, or at least lots of them.
Yes, absolutely. Not only in Pennsylvania, but many states. Yesterday, the Supreme Court of the United States did not hear an argument in North Carolina. And that's even worse, because now they're allowed to count votes up to 9 days after the election. So that vote won't be certified until November 12th, which is just unbelievable when you look at it. And that's where, again, President Trump's instincts are unparalleled in this type of stuff. And he you know, identified it early on. And I'm hoping we don't have systemic voter fraud, but he put his finger on voter fraud. And sure enough, I mean, when you get into a situation like this where you have 9 extra days to, quote, count votes, I mean, this is, you know, kind of like the Wild West.
It is.
And so we need to be very careful, and people need to be vigilant, you know, in terms of, you know, what type of activity might happen in this period of time, because we want to get to that result as quickly as possible, but we also want to make sure it's free and fair.
Well, you were there in 2016. You saw what the external polls showed, and they showed that Hillary Clinton was going to walk away with it. Obviously, that wasn't the case. Now, a couple questions springing from that central proposition there. I'm guessing, as all presidential campaigns do, that Trump currently has some internal polling data. Back in 2016, I'm certain that Trump had internal polling data, too. What did that data show? Did that data show Trump ahead as the ultimate outcome was, or did it mirror some of the outside polls which had Hillary ahead?
No, and internally what we saw, Brian, is that we had 2 days before the election, we got numbers back, and we had won the majority of the key states that we needed to. So 2 days before the election in 2020, we felt that we were going to be able to win this thing. But as with any election, and they're unpredictable, because I can poll you 100 times, but if you don't wake up on Election Day and get up out of your bed and go vote, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't, you know, all those polls have you know, they're completely irrelevant. So it's obviously important that people get up. But yeah, from an internal poll perspective, these guys are watching everything. And there's one thing that, you know, I'll say is that we learned in 2016, and that's going to be even more effective in 2020, is we call it the Trump factor. And that was kind of that silent Trump vote, those people that obviously didn't want to say they're going to vote for Trump, but then went to the polls and then they did. And that number is going to be massive. And you determine that number in large part based by intensity or enthusiasm. And I don't think there's any question, any doubt whatsoever, even the Democrats' mind, of who has more intensity and enthusiasm in terms of their voters, and that's Donald Trump.
Isn't that the truth? I was thinking about Joe Biden. Joe Biden doesn't even appear to have any enthusiasm for his own campaign.
So, yeah, I mean, the question is, you know, why does he want the job? I mean, he certainly doesn't act like he wants it.
Well, I don't think he even knows he's running, to be honest with you, Rick. His puppet masters, the marionette string operators, are motivated because Joe appeared, past tense, to be the most moderate among them, and that's why he ended up getting the nomination. He has not demonstrated some mental acuity and clarity of late, and I think a lot of people are catching on to that. Plus, we're all worried that it's going to be President Kamala Harris, and that, I mean, even amongst a lot of Democrats, I would think that poses a real concern for them, Rick. Most of my Democrat friends aren't as far left as the party seems to have drifted.
Absolutely. And you look at the way Kamala Harris did her presidential bid. I mean, she basically pulled less than 2%. I mean, so even within her own party, her own, you know, Democratic states and their state primaries, she did horrible. And so I think you're absolutely right. It's a valid question to raise. I mean, I think that's why she's so giddy on the campaign trail right now, and why, you know, even Joe Biden keeps referring to her as the Harris-Biden administration, you know, because that very scenario might actually happen.
Rick Gates, this has been a great conversation. I guess one more question about the polls before we let you go. I know we don't trust the polls after 2016 for reasons we just talked about. Do you have any information or do you have any knowledge or understanding as to whether the pollsters learned anything from 2016 in order to save their own reputation? Are they conducting better polls now, or do you think they're still, because again, this goes to the question of who's winning right now in terms of polls, but do they have any reliability, these outside polls, Rick?
No, I don't think they do. And the reason is because these pollsters are using methodologies that are, you know, based on historical information. So the one piece of information that not even Republicans or Democratic pollsters can do is understand how much of a silent Trump vote, how much of that Trump factor actually exists. And you can't predict that because nobody has any idea in each of the battleground states how many people are going to come out with Donald Trump, even though they say they may not.
Yeah.
And that's where they messed up in 2016. That's where they're going to mess up in 2020 as well.
So got a prediction? Rick Gates, before you head out.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump's going to win. All right. Well, let's hope it. And I'm obviously praying for that contingency because I don't want to see the country I love drift into permanent socialism because it's a recipe for poverty for everybody. But I hope it's a big win so we don't have protracted litigation on through and maybe even past when the next president's supposed to be sworn in.
Yeah, that I agree with you. That's the biggest thing is, let's, you know, like in 2016, there was a lot of talk about that. And, you know, thankfully, we did not have to encounter that. But I think it's going to be close. I mean, look, our country is kind of divided right down the middle. You know, outside of those two swing votes that you have, you know, pretty much everybody's made up their mind. So I think it's going to be close. But I think the key is to get every voter out there as possible.
No doubt about it. And with that rally cry, I'm going to ask my listeners to go out. You can vote today. Get over to the Board of Elections. Rick Gates, Trump's 2016 Deputy Campaign Chairman, it's been great talking with you. I appreciate the optimism. We'll keep our fingers crossed that you're right.
Thanks, Brian. I really appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
My pleasure, man. You too. 718 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Coming up, Jennifer Gross running for State Representative District 52 here in Ohio. That's Westchester. She'll be on at 740. We got the opportunity.